Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level? I can't stop telling everybody about my new FeatherSnap bird feeder. It's a Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeder, blending the best of technology and nature. I've enjoyed so much since we got this thing set up, looking up close at the birds when they land on the feeder. I get a notification to my phone with a picture. There's 3 pictures every time a bird lands on the feeder. And I get to see some cool action shots. I can see their faces close up, their eyes, their feathers, the detail on their heads. It's amazing. I've enjoyed seeing woodpeckers, goldfinches, male and female, house finches, chickadees, tufted titmouse, blue jay, a few squirrels. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. No more meal planning, no more stressing about nutrition, no more shopping. Every Sunbasket meal is designed by dietitians and chefs to be healthy, nourishing, and delicious with none of the hassle. You can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy recipes each week with dietary options like Mediterranean diet, vegetarian, carb conscious, and even gluten-free dishes, all featuring organic fresh produce. There are truly options for everyone. Plus, you don't have to lock into one type of meal plan. Pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Sunbasket takes care of all the hard parts of healthy eating and delivers right to your door. All you do is follow the easy step-by-step recipes, dig in, and enjoy the benefits of eating your best. I was excited to find out that they had plans including gluten-free and dairy-free recipes that are tasty. Go to sunbasket.com/therapychat today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/therapychat to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 433.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so pleased to be bringing you a conversation that I have been looking forward to for a long time. I talked with a counselor here in Maryland who has become a friend, Jeremy Moeller. Jeremy Moeller is a licensed therapist, a men's coach, and a writer. He's the author of Make Men Emotional Again, an email newsletter helping men and couples have better relationships, and he sees therapy clients in Baltimore and Silver Spring, Maryland. Jeremy is a very interesting person. He also used to be a meditation teacher, so that's something that he talks about in our conversation, and he uses IFS therapy in his practice. And the way that he talks about helping men get connected with their emotions relates to parts work, IFS. And he is putting a lot of content to help men learn about being human and not trying to pretend to be robots. he's sharing a lot about that on Instagram. And by the way that some men are responding to his posts, you can see why his work is so needed. If you've listened to Therapy Chat before, you know that I'm always talking about the harmful effects of the patriarchy. And while the patriarchy is, it's extremely detrimental to women, children, and members of any groups that have been marginalized because of the patriarchy, but it's brutal for men too. It's the patriarchy that says that men have to look a certain way, behave a certain way, and suppress their emotions. And anyone who's ever been around babies and toddlers knows that boys feel just as much as girls do. And the fact that adult men believe in Western culture that they have to be quiet or be loud and never show fear, never show vulnerability is one of the reasons why we have the current situation that we do in our country and why authoritarian regimes are becoming more powerful around the world. Although I'm not giving up hope in any way. I know that we're going to get through this, but Jeremy and the work he's doing are one of the bright lights in the current dialogue about how men are supposed to be. And I'm really grateful that he was comfortable to come and talk about what he does on Therapy Chat. So let's get into my conversation with Jeremy Moeller. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm very happy to be joined by Jeremy Moeller. Jeremy, thanks for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you, Laura. I have so much gratitude towards you for inviting me.
Well, I have a lot of gratitude back to you for accepting. I've been really, actually very eager to talk with you since I met you, very eager to talk to you here on the podcast about the work you're doing to help men connect with vulnerability and be able to really show up authentically in a full expression of themselves, which is something that right now at this time in history and in our culture, there's such a heavy push of masculinity and, like, I would even say hypermasculinity in a lot of the cultural messaging that's out there for everyone, but boys and young men are really exposed to this too, and that it's impactful to their identity development. So I think what you're doing is really valuable. And I love that as a therapist, you are using some really interesting ways of working with this. So I'm excited for our audience to hear about that. But before we start with that, can you just tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Definitely. Yeah. So I'm a licensed therapist, relatively new, licensed for a couple of years now. Before that, I taught meditation. So I was a mindfulness meditation teacher, sort of as a, you know, side hustle, and did that for a number of years, and then wanted to be a professional in terms of working in the healing space with people. And so got my counseling master's degree a few years ago, and then have been practicing now in a private practice as a licensed therapist in Maryland and in DC. I live in Baltimore, so I'm based there. I've spent a long time in DC before that, so really connected down there as well. Outside of that, I also lead a few men's groups, involved in men's work. And then I also am a writer, something I did for many years before becoming a meditation teacher and a therapist. And so my dream, I'm not quite there yet, but is to be to work directly with folks like half the day and then the other half of the day write. And so the other thing I'll mention, and this is related to what you were just sharing, Laura, is that I came into the therapeutic work in this field not necessarily wanting to focus on masculinity. I came in interested in working with anybody, kind of a wide net, and I've learned that that's pretty common now for kind of beginning therapists. I was trained in internal family systems, IFS, and I'm almost done with my level one now. And so I was like, I'll work with anyone, you know, whoever wants to, you know, have me kind of guide them using IFS, like jump on in. But pretty quickly I learned that, or what happened was, more and more men were coming to me. And I don't think it was anything special about myself. I think it was just that, just like anyone of any sort of identity, generally speaking, I'm painting with a broad brush, but cisgender men seem to feel more comfortable working with another cisgender man. And so majority of my caseload now is men, is made up of men. And as I've been doing that work for, you know, probably about a year solid now, it's been mostly work with men. It's really woken me up to what's going on inside of myself and sort of the ways that I've been socialized, as you were saying, as a man, and how that holds me back in so many ways. It's just really shining light on that. And so now I'm committed to diving deep into that work and doing the men's work, writing about it, and more about my newsletter later. But yeah, that's where I'm at. There's another thing I want to say. What we're starting out here, you know, you said you were eager to chat with me, and I definitely was, and still am, very eager to continue this chat. I also noticed as I was sitting with it this morning, my feelings about coming onto the podcast, how nervous a part of me was to be here. And I think when I sat with it, I kind of realized that I remember hearing your podcast. I think it was like 2018 or 19, somewhere in there. I think early days of the podcast. And I remember there's a moment, actually, I remember like vividly driving down, I think it was Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C., listening to the podcast.
This is so weird to hear, but keep going.
Okay. Hopefully okay.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And it was equine therapy. Oh. I think someone was on talking about working with horses.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I remember a light bulb. Like, whoa, like you can really take what you really care about and what has healed you and helped healed you and bring that into doing this work. And I really listened to a number of your podcasts, and I was just so grateful for this chat, kind of like you said, I think before we jumped on, like a fly on the wall,
yeah,
listening to two therapists chat in a coffee shop. And that was so helpful for me, like so powerful for me early in my journey. So I just wanted to thank you for that. And I think it made me be like, oh, am I ready for this? Like there was a part that was so scared, but I spent time with it this morning and I'm feeling better now. Uh-oh. A little less nervous.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And that's, yeah, in 2018, I was so fascinated with equine work and learning more about it, and did a few podcasts on that. And I still love that work. It's, I will say that just to meet you in the vulnerability that, you know, the equine work was something that opened up something in me, and I'm getting teary eyed, but that I didn't know was there. And I think that's what happens when we allow ourselves to meet the vulnerable parts of ourselves, that we find parts that, you know, we've like, literally legit, if no one's, who's not watching the video, I'm like, tears are streaming down my face. But just to meet those parts that are hidden from us because it doesn't match up with the way we had to be seen, or, you know, the ways that it was safe to be seen. And I think that relates very much to what we're going to talk about now, the vulnerable parts of ourselves, and how for men, culturally, traditionally and culturally, it's been very unsafe to show vulnerability. And that really hurts men. And it hurts the people they interact with. It hurts the people in their lives. And that's the thing that's so meaningful to me about the way that the work that you're doing, because I've worked with survivors of sexual and intimate partner violence, gender-based violence for my whole career for now. I think this is 22 years. And those attitudes and beliefs of traditional masculinity, or, you know, hyper masculinity, where men can't be sensitive, really contribute to those types of violence. So this is just important to me on so many levels.
Just so much coming up inside. And I feel like when the tears were coming up for you, it just, something softened in my body, and just like, it helped relax that nervous part of me, your vulnerability. So I really appreciate you going there. And I didn't know that about the equine therapy sort of being something you were focused on there for a bit. So yeah, I'm we can side table that and to another chat some other time, but I would love to hear about the early days of the podcast and all that. So, yeah. But yeah, to share a riff of what you were just saying, I actually, you know, I just want to share that coming into doing this chat with you, like I said, I noticed this really nervous part, and this is probably a week now. There's been this part of me shows up every once in a while, and I found myself, it was almost like preparing for a test, like in high school or college or something. Like, oh, I need to cram. Like, am I ready for this conversation about masculinity and men and doing therapy with men? And, you know, I wanted to like make like a cheat sheet with all the facts that I was going to say. And like this part of me was really concerned about coming into this and not being prepared. And I finally got to spend some time with it over the last few days. And this is why I'm really grateful for, you know, trauma-informed kind of modalities. And for me, particularly in internal family systems and sort of working parts, because I was able to kind of give this part some space. And I learned actually just this morning that this part felt like I was back playing soccer. And I think this distinct memory I had this morning was, I think I was like 12 or 13. And I had played soccer, grew up playing soccer and competitively, like for select teams, and like really was a big part of my identity. And, you know, imagined one day I would play professional, like I was very much into it. And then I took a break, like 10 or 11 years old, to play baseball and really take that seriously, because I was doing both before that. And I realized that I loved soccer, like I need to go back. So I think I was 12 or 13. I rejoined this pretty highly competitive select team. And I remember being back at practice and just feeling out of the group. Like these, my friends had played together the year before. I missed out on that. They were also a little older than me. I think it was like slightly younger for the team. And so, and then at 12 or 13, they're like hitting puberty. And like, I just felt so behind and unprepared, and I had lost some skills. And this morning I was touching in with that young version of me. And he felt so alone in that. He didn't have, like, I don't remember a coach or my parents asking me how I felt about it, you know, seeing if I needed any support, anything like that. And I don't notice any in this moment, any sort of judgment to the adults in that situation. But I just remember really feeling unprepared, like I was behind. And I felt like I was outside the group, like they were joking and having fun and I wasn't part of it. And I was an outcast, it felt like, at that point. And so, yeah, I just felt so much compassion for that little one feeling that way this morning. And I realized that he was feeling like if he got better at soccer or if he had it all figured out, that maybe they would accept him again and he could be part of the team. And really, I've touched in with that part before. I've connected with it and seen how it does show up now as an adult. And here it was, for this podcast, this part that feels like I need to be prepared. And I just want to connect that with masculinity, you know, in my work with many of my cisgender men clients and the therapy groups that I run for men. Yeah, there's this part that shows up so many times, especially when a man is coming to therapy for the first time and doing this work of, well, I've got it. I got to have it all figured out. I got to be prepared. I can't be vulnerable. I can't appear to be weak in any kind of way. And I feel like working with my parts, like that little one I was just talking about, really gives me a glimpse of where that comes from. You know, there was, when I was 12 or 13, I was kind of kicked out of the crew, kicked out of the boys club, because I felt like, well, I wasn't prepared. I was behind. They just didn't know who I was anymore. I was a little younger. And my answer was like, well, I need to get prepared. I need to know what I'm doing. I need to get better at soccer. Then maybe I'll be less lonely. I'll be part of it. Yeah. So there's so much there that I, you know, just scratching the surface of, but I wanted to share that experience.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I want to say two things. One is that you mentioned how when I started crying, which I was embarrassed about, but let it flow because that's me. I'm very sensitive. That softens something in you. So that one piece that immediately comes to mind is that when we allow ourselves to show vulnerability, other people that we're interacting with feel more comfortable being themselves and more safe, you know, within the interaction. And the other part that I wanted to mention is that, just to sort of amplify what you said about performance would be your way out of that vulnerable, you know, the vulnerable emotions of feeling lonely, left out, that you don't belong, not accepted, not a part of things, you know, especially at that age when being a part of a group becomes so important. And then the parents and coaches not even seeing the fact that you needed some emotional support there. You know, I immediately thought about my own kids and who played soccer, and the thinking about the dynamics of that time, which probably was not far from the exact time when you were talking about, when you were actually going through what you were going through. It wasn't a thought of anyone about how a kid was feeling. It just wasn't, I mean, I'd always be like, well, he's trying his best. Like, come on, let's cheer for everyone. And other people would look at me like, you're weird. Like, it's, you know, and now you hear this thing about like people getting trophies for not doing anything. That's this like whole idea among some groups of people. And it's just diminishes the humanity of each person, that we all have feelings. But I think with boys in particular, we look at boys and we think, well, they don't have any feelings. They're fine. They just want to run and play and roughhouse and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were just saying that about boys, and yeah, just something about it is just making me feel so much sadness, like, and compassion for the men in my life, like friends of mine, clients of mine, people in my family, just, yeah, just how many men right now are struggling, and they're struggling alone. Key part of like struggling alone, or, and I just want to bring this in, that, and this kind of ties actually to my story too a little bit, they're struggling alone, or they're putting all of their emotional weight, all their needs emotionally on a partner, like one person, especially if the man had a relationship with a woman.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's either, those are the two choices, it feels like, often, particularly for straight men. And like I said, it connects with my story, because I first went to therapy because a relationship of mine was not going well. And my partner said, hey, maybe you should go to therapy and work on some stuff. And I resisted for a while. And then because I had always grown up thinking that therapy was for people who were quote unquote crazy.
Right.
And if you're listening, I'm putting that in quotes here, you know, or you're Tony Soprano. Like, there's, I only saw it in movies and shows. And so, yeah, I resisted for a while. And then I went, and something happened in that first session where I was like, whoa, someone's holding space for me and caring for me in a way that I've only experienced with partners before. There's another option here. And that started my journey. That the relationship didn't work out, but I stuck with therapy and then saw how powerful it was. I joined men's groups, and then now I've become a therapist. And so I actually find that majority of my clients now who come to me, it's their first time coming to therapy. They're coming because of a relationship issue, like whether they're going through a divorce or there's so much conflict and turmoil in their relationship that their partner is almost, you know, laying down an ultimatum, or is laying down an ultimatum that they must go. So I just really want to underline that, like, sense of struggling alone, mm-hmm. and the sense of not being able to ask for help that really keeps so many men boxed up. And again, I don't want, you know, I'm painting with a broad brush here. We are, it's not like other people don't feel that as well. I think we live in a very individualistic society, so it impacts all of us. And I also want to stress that the pie of like suffering and, you know, things that we're talking about here, struggles that people go through, that pie is not finite. I think that it's not zero sum. Women are struggling in our society, especially in, you know, politically, as things, you know, like abortion rights, reproductive rights are being rolled back, you know, back to the 1800s right now. You know, that's
yes,
and all kinds of other marginalized identities, and men are struggling too. Wanted to bring that in as well.
Yeah, well, thank you. And what you said about men's reasons for going to therapy, I've seen the same thing, that it's usually either an ultimatum by a partner that, you know, I'm not happy in this relationship because you are not able to express yourself emotionally, or you're being, you know, you're expressing yourself emotionally in ways that are harmful to myself or the family. And so if you don't stop doing that, get that under control somehow, we're not going to stay together. Or they go to couples therapy. And then the couples,
my issue with perimenopause was bloating, inflammation. I was also super fatigued and I had a lot of trouble sleeping. Now it's easier to manage menopause with Hormone Harmony. I went to a party last weekend and I couldn't believe how many of the women I was talking to were saying that they were going through perimenopause and had no relief from bloating, gas, hot flashes, mood swings, and just not feeling themselves. And I got it. I told them, I've been there. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. Women can't stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogen. Here's the beauty about adaptogen. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymama.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymama.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today.
Therapist recommends for the, you know, both individuals or the male partner, you know, that's the reason that the male partner starts going to therapy. But what you said about the women's rights, you know, the patriarchy, my perspective, and this isn't my opinion, the patriarchy is a problem for all genders. And the patriarchy is threatened by gentleness and sensitivity because the patriarchy as a force is focused on, you know, power, like kind of power in the hands of a few. And all of the ways of enforcing patriarchal norms harm anyone who's not a cisgender male fitting a certain profile, you know? So not all cisgender males fit into the construct of what the patriarchy, you know, I think it just strips people of what makes them individual and what makes them human. And so we were going to talk a little bit about that. And I would love for you to sort of expand on how traditional masculinity, which is, you know, what I'm calling one of the ways that the patriarchal norms are enforced, how it holds men back and what men crave, what they really want.
Love that word, crave. I love that so much. I'm glad we're going here and you went towards the patriarchy, because another part of my story that I want to mention is, I really want to highlight here for people listening, like, it's been a journey for me to allow different parts of myself and parts of my history and my story into my work as a therapist. And so I want to mention that I did work in politics before becoming a therapist. And I worked with the labor movement. So I worked with teachers unions. I worked with other unions representing workers around the country. And I did that for 7 years. So it's really hard for me not to look at the systemic dimension of what we're talking about here.
I think it would be missing something if we didn't, because it's affecting all of us, whether we realize it or not. Sorry for the interruption.
Exactly. No, exactly. I love that. So true. So true. And so as I've kind of made this turn towards working for men or working with men in therapy, I've gotten really curious about, where do these ideas of traditional masculinity come from? Why are they here? What do they serve? Who do they serve? And the more that I've learned about that, the more that I've become confident in the idea or the argument that men are harmed by patriarchy as well.
100%.
You can even maybe just say the majority of men are, but I would say men in general are harmed by patriarchy and these norms, this idea of traditional masculinity. There is certainly privilege that men have. There's certainly, for some men, economically and materially and politically, access to power that others don't have. But beside that, setting that aside, there are a lot of negatives that are caused, you know, by patriarchy to men. And what I've really zoomed in on is this idea of quote unquote, I'm going to put that in quotes, traditional masculinity. And so, you know, I remember growing up, I was born in 1985, so I was kind of a 90s kid mostly. I remember the book, I think it's Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, I think was the name. It's kind of a big bestseller. And I think I was watching like Maury Povich, some sort of like TV
daytime talk show,
and watch daytime talk show. And they were talking about, and they had men on one side and women on the other side. The framing, the discussion was that like men and women are just inherently, naturally, traditionally different. You know, we're even from different planets. And how do we work with that? How do we date? How do we be in a relationship with each other? And so I feel like that's something, a message that I really internalized, you know, and before that, it was even stronger, that sort of idea. And I remember hearing about, you know, cavemen used to hunt and, you know, care and protect the family that was in the cave family. So men are naturally supposed to be outside and be aggressive and be physical and aren't as emotional as women, who naturally, you know, going way back to cave times, prehistoric times, women were caring for children, caring for others, and, you know, taking care of the home, the cave. And so therefore, women are naturally more emotional and more nurturing than men. So they should care for children, or they're better at it. But like I said, the more I've kind of dug into the history, primarily reading feminists, women who have done this work, and looked at the history, these traditional ideas about gender are actually not traditional. They're only a few hundred years old. You know, patriarchy's been around a long time, but prior to a few hundred years ago, particularly in Europe and America and the US, you know, women, I saw a study recently that said that they're estimating that up to half of prehistoric big game hunters, so these were people hunting, I'm assuming, like mastodons or woolly mammoths, like huge animals, up to half of them were biologically female, were women. There's all kinds of research happening that's showing that gender roles prior, again, to a few hundred years ago, were very diverse around the world in different communities, different societies. I remember reading recently that I think in like the 1200s in Italy at the time, women were doctors, women were lawyers, like women had professional jobs. There was still patriarchy, there were still bad things happening. But in terms of gender roles, this idea of men being more focused on work and achievement, being productive and being outside the home, and women being more caring and nurturing, that sort of binary idea about gender is relatively new. And so I say that to say that, going back to why men come to therapy often, it's usually because their partner wants them or needs them to continue the relationship. I think a lot of men come to this work because they have to, because they want to save a relationship. And they also feel like they have to do it for women. They have to do it for their partner. It's not about helping themselves. It's like, I need to do whatever I need to do to then make them happy and fix the relationship. And I stress very early on that this is actually about them, for them, and that these kind of ideas of traditional masculinity hold us back in so many ways. And unlearning these ideas, again, because they're relatively new, they're not set in stone, they're not natural, can improve our lives as men as well.
Right. Couldn't agree with you more. And I feel like when you said a few hundred years ago, it's what was happening in a few hundred years ago? You know, I just think about, for example, if you don't, you know, just to use masculinity and femininity as two binaries for this conversation, if you disempower women and you don't let them work and you don't give them access to being able to support themselves, then they have to marry for protection from other men. And, you know, I think about how, and I wasn't a women's studies major, but I'm a sociology undergrad major. I think about how, you know, like if the way things are is just the way they are when you're born and the way you see them, right? So if women don't have the rights to own property and they don't have ways to support themselves, so they're dependent upon marriage, then it looks like, well, this is what it's always been, when it's really, that was a construct that was created for a deliberate intention of disempowering people. When you look historically at, like, if women can't vote, so in colonial America, women and enslaved people were man's property. And even the system of laws is so focused on protecting property. So historically, over thousands of years, I guess, you know, a long time in human time. I don't know when it changed because that's not my background, but you know, wars for power through property were just what was going on, and everything else that was happening was like in service to those who were trying to get other people's land and property from them. So, you know, day-to-day life that was all about eating, taking care of children, all of those things was just in service to colonial powers that were trying to get more power and money and wealth through seizing and taking property. And then, you know, our laws, even around abuse, it was like a man was allowed to abuse a woman that he was with, like his wife. But if another man was to abuse her, that might be a problem, you know, like, so even laws around rape were focused on like, you took my property kind of thing, you know? And I mean, if you think about it that way, it's just, we have, even women, we haven't had power until like the second half of the 20th century was when, I mean, my mom didn't drive until she learned to drive like maybe in the late 60s or early 70s. But before that, she was a person who couldn't drive. So she had to, you know, she was dependent on someone else for transportation at all times. And being forced to take care of kids, you can't really work outside the home because who's going to be taking care of the kids? So you don't have ways to get money. So if you're not happy in your relationship, you can't leave because how are you going to support yourself? And in a violent world where men are aggressive to women, you're not safe if you're not protected by a relationship with a man. So this isn't like just the way it's always been. This is something that was created for a purpose. So going back to what you said about when you were thinking about like, where did this start? In social work, this is one of the best things I learned in social work with my MSW. When you're trying to understand laws and policies and things that are going on, ask who benefits is the first question, like you said. And then the answer to who benefits is follow the money. So if you're ever like, why is this like this? And you just say, well, who's benefiting here? Follow the money and you'll see who's benefiting.
Yes, this is, oh, I love that you're going here, that we're going in this direction. And I didn't know about the sociology part of you. I almost got a PhD in sociology. I was very much focused on that early on. So
I do love sociology.
Yeah, love that we're talking about this. Yeah. Yeah. I think just to respond to what you just said there, I actually didn't know about that particular, that law around rape, as you were saying. It makes so much sense and it's horrible. Yeah. I think, you know, what I try to stress to men, both in my work with them, but also in my newsletter for men, my writing, is that doing this work on ourselves and learning how to unlearn these norms so then we can be more vulnerable, more emotionally available for not only our partners, but also our friends, our family, our children, our neighbors. You know, it kind of extends out, which to me leads to just a better life overall, is having more connection and more community. It's not about making our partner happy. It's not about someone else. It's about us and what we can gain from this work. And it's about actually reclaiming something that we already have inside. Mm-hmm. It's just been kind of covered over by these parts of us that have been given these messages of how we need to be. And so it's under there. And there were studies done on infants. I don't remember what year it was, but relatively recently, that found that young boys actually express more emotion than young girls, in this one study at least. But then around 3, 4, 5 years old, those emotions get squashed. And then it kind of flips the other way around. And so to me, that's a sign that we are naturally not like emotionally repressed. We are naturally emotional, just like any other human being. And then again, prior to a few hundred years ago, there were men and women living in all kinds of diverse gender roles around the world. And so it's something that's already there. Like, we are capable of it. but it gets covered up by these parts of us that go through traumatic experiences early in life. And it can be relational trauma. It can be like when I played soccer and I felt like I wasn't prepared and I felt like I wasn't part of it and no adult was there with me in those feelings. That was like a little mini trauma moment for me. And so it created this part of me that's like, okay, well, I'm going to be prepared now. I'm always going to show up ready to go and know what I'm doing, because otherwise I'm going to get kicked out or I'm not going to be part of this. So I'm going to feel lonely and sad. And so that script, that sort of traditional masculine idea of always being prepared, calm, cool, and collected, mm-hmm. always have the answer, you know, be effective, be productive, be competent, has driven my life in so many ways since then. And I have a lot of compassion for it and appreciation for it. Like it's helped me in a lot of ways to live in this society and make money and have a career and all these things. But it also holds me back relationally, like I said. So yeah, I just feel like I want to stress to men that this work is about you. It's not about making anyone else happy, but it actually will lead to more connection and more, you know, better relationships in the long run.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a great way to wrap up our time. And I just want to add one little piece that you didn't necessarily touch on now about, you know, it's not good for our health to suppress and repress our emotions. It's, you know, men tend to die of heart attacks and strokes. And that's not like a genetic difference of men. I believe that it relates to always holding things in. And when you're holding in important aspects of yourself, you're shutting down your life force in some ways. And I'm not blaming people for doing something that they were conditioned to do from very early, but I'm challenging that this is the way it is and that it can't change, because what you're doing, the work you're doing, is really important to that effort. And I'm so grateful to you for coming here to talk about it, Jeremy. So tell our listeners, where can they find your newsletter, your groups?
Yeah, so they can find me at my website, jeremymoeller.blog, B-L-O-G. Back when I was writing more, and so I kept that name. Now it's my website, so I have to keep that. But yeah, jeremymoeller.blog. And so they can learn about my men's groups. They can learn about my individual therapy that I offer. And then I've got an email newsletter that I send out every week about these topics that we were just talking about. And that's called Make Men Emotional Again. It's a little joke, but yeah, they can find that at substack.com if they search for that, or if they Google that, or they can go to makemenemotionalagain.com.
Beautiful. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of you with our listeners and me today. And I'm just really grateful for the work that you're doing. Thank you for being my guest.
Laura, thank you so much. I feel like I just want to continue to hang out and go get coffee and keep chatting.
Wow.
So I'm kind of sad that I have to jump off and I actually have a client. So
yeah,
I have to, but yeah, I'm really grateful for this. I had so much fun and yeah, just really appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you. Well, we can continue this in real life since we do live in the same area. So,
that's right.
But for now, we'll say goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.